Thanks, Paul, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Witt from Purdue, and I'm a librarian. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to tell you a little bit about our effort to design and roll out an institutional data repository service and virtual research environment. I've got three main agenda items, I guess, for my talk today. The first is to introduce PUR, the Purdue University Research Repository. I'd like to introduce it to you the same way that we introduce it to our designated community, our faculty researchers, graduate researchers, and staff researchers. And then with a 4-minute video, and then take a moment to dive a little bit deeper into the workflow, how the service is put together, how it's staffed, a little bit about the software, and then if time permits, conclude with just some observations from me, half a dozen recommendations coming from a repository manager on some simple things that repository managers can do to promote the citation of the data they have in their repositories. And so for context, what we've seen this week at RDA and even here today at the data site meeting is an ecosystem of data repositories. And so there are some repositories that are kind of forming around publishing activities like Dryad, came out of the evolutionary biology community. There are other repositories that are disciplinary in nature or subdisciplinary, some that are consortial like ICPSR and social science, some that are federal efforts that are happening at a countrywide level like in Australia, others that are government portals for data, research centers having their own data repositories, some instruments that are so large and generate so much data that they have their own repository solutions. There are things like the excellent FigShare service, which is kind of a general purpose repository. There are things like Dataverse out of Harvard, roll your own repository. And then in my context, coming from a university, an institutional data repository service. And this is by no means a perfect taxonomy. I mean, there are lots of other kinds of things that are out there. Data portals, data that are come with analytical tools, et cetera. But this is just to say that there are lots of different pieces to this puzzle, and we all have, I think, a role to play in terms of meeting the needs of our users and scoping for our designated communities. And so talking about the people behind PUR, this is a collaboration on our campus between the libraries, our campus IT, ITAP, and the Office of the Vice President for Research, which includes our sponsored program services. And very importantly, our designated community is defined as Purdue University faculty, graduate student, and staff researchers, and their collaborators, and the current and future users of their data. And so, like I said, what I want to do is I want to introduce PUR to you in the way that we do to our faculty and our staff and graduate students that are users with a short 4-minute video. Sergio.
Welcome to the Purdue University Research Repository, or PUR. You can access PUR on the web at purr.purdue.edu. PUR is a web-based platform that researchers can use to share data and collaborate on research online. In this video, we are going to give you a brief overview of the 4 main ways that you can use PUR. You can use PUR to create a data management plan for a grant proposal, to collaborate with other researchers, to publish datasets, and archive your datasets in a secure, trustworthy digital repository. If you submit a grant proposal to the National Science Foundation, you'll be required to write and include a 2-page data management plan with your proposal. Many other research funders in the U.S. are beginning to require data management plans, such as the Department of Energy, NIH, EPA, DOD, NOAA, NIH, and the USDA. PUR can help you get started to write an effective data management plan by providing example plans, tutorials, videos, and other useful resources. If you'd like to use PUR to manage your research data, we provide boilerplate text that you can copy, paste, and edit in your grant proposal. Any Purdue faculty member, staff, or graduate student can create a project on PERP and receive a default allocation of data storage without any cost to them. They can register a grant to work with the project and receive a substantial increase in their allocation of storage, also at no cost to them. After creating your project, you can invite collaborators from Purdue or other institutions. Your invited collaborators will receive an email with a link for them to click and access your project. PER was built using the Hub Zero platform for scientific collaboration, which includes a powerful set of tools for sharing data and facilitating online research and collaboration. For example, members of a project can upload and share data files with version control and social network style communication and project management features. Access to the project space is limited to the members of the project. If you're ready to share your data with the world, you can publish data sets from within your private project space. Simply select the files that make up your data set, provide some information about the data set, and submit it for publication. Published data sets are presented with rich metadata, making it easy for people to find and understand your research. Purdue is one of only three data site agencies in the United States who can issue digital object identifiers, or DOIs, for data sets. A DOI is a globally unique and resolvable identifier for your data set that makes it easy for people to cite your data and give you credit when they reuse it. PER emails users a report every month to show them how many times their data sets have been accessed. Many researchers find that publishing their data sets increases the number of citations to their published work and improves the impact of their research. Your published data sets will be securely and reliably preserved in PER for a minimum of 10 years, after which time they will be supported and managed as part of the university's library collections. PER was designed and is maintained with the current best practices and standards of digital preservation. We're currently preparing to be audited as an ISO 16363 trustworthy digital repository. In summary, Purdue researchers and their collaborators are taking advantage of PER to write data management plans, collaborate on their research online, publish their data sets with DOIs, and archive their data in a secure, reliable repository. Since its launch, PER has been included in the data management plans of over 700 grant proposals. If you have questions about PER or research data management services, please visit the PER website at purr.purdue.edu or contact us by email or telephone. PER is a university research core facility that has been made possible by a collaboration of the Office of the Vice President for Research, Information Technology at Purdue, and the Purdue University Libraries.
Thanks, if I could get my slides back. Or we could watch it again. No, please. So this gives you an idea of, you know, how kind of the shingle that we're hanging out on our storefront for our researchers to describe what the service is about and entice them to engage with it. If you were to go back 2 years in our conference room and you looked on the whiteboard, you would see something similar to this. This is the original workflow diagram that we drew up in designing the PER service. So what we tried to do is we tried to look at the research data lifecycle. There are many different diagrams out there. Everyone has them. They're circular in nature. And what we tried to do is we tried to think of what would the researcher's needs be at each step in that cycle, and what can we offer in a service, not just in a repository software feature and functionality, but what people would need to be involved in the service. What would the roles and responsibilities and policies and resources needed for each of these steps. And so you start with the data management plan creation. A user would create an account in PER and log in and create a project. You don't need to have a grant to create a project in PER. By default, you get 10 gigabytes of storage of project space, and you can publish up to a gigabyte of data. This is just to support the research enterprise at our university. If you write a grant proposal and the grant is funded and you register it and associate it with your project, you go up to 100 gigabytes of project storage and 10 gigabytes of published data. So you create the project, You invite collaborators to join the project. You can share files and use the collaborative features of the project space, register your grant, and then hopefully at some point you want to submit a data set for publication. You go ahead and describe your data set, attach the files to it, and submit it. It's held in a queue for up to 2 business days, just waiting a review from a subject specialist librarian who has 1 foot in library science and the other foot in a subject specialty, not peer reviewing the data, but just making sure that it's complete, it's an appropriate use of the system, that it has adequate metadata, and this kind of thing. And then they go ahead and post the data set with a data site DOI, where we commit upfront to archiving the data for a minimum of 10 years. And that's not to say that we'll just keep it for 10 years, but we say is we make that initial commitment. And then at the end of that initial commitment, the subject specialist librarian will work with the digital archivist to make a selection decision about whether to keep the data or not. And that will fall under the jurisdiction of the libraries and our collection management policies and procedures. So to kind of jump into those steps of the workflow a little bit more in what we offer with PER, in terms of supporting data management plans, you saw in the video that we offer boilerplate text. We also offer some example data management plans. Jake Carlson wrote an excellent self-assessment tool, which is essentially a series of questions that a researcher can ask himself or herself to be able to put together an effective data management plan. We also promote the use of the DMP tool, which was featured on Monday at the RDA meeting at the poster session. This is a website that researchers can log into. They can select their institution and their funding agency they're submitting their grant proposal to, and it will guide them through the process of answering specific questions and at the end generate a data management plan for them. In addition to that, we've had workshops in person on our campus. I think we got to about 3 or 4 of those, and we decided we'd go ahead and just videotape and put one online. And so that's available on the PER website. We have a number of tutorials, funder-specific tutorials. And then last, but certainly not least, we have a reference service and consultation with librarians. So our subject librarians are familiar with the data management plan requirements for the funders in their subject specialties, and they're available to consult with researchers in writing an effective plan or reviewing a plan. And then we've integrated our online chat widget with PER as just another point of access where someone can just ask a question by instant message or by email. So inside the project space, what happens is a Purdue faculty, staff, or graduate student creates a project. They provide some information to describe the project, like the title and an abstract and that kind of thing. And then they're asked a series of questions to disclaim their use of sensitive or restricted data. This is something that took us probably about 4 months to work through the appropriate people on our campus to dealing with IRB data, dealing with export HIPAA, FERPA-controlled data, and these kinds of things. And each of them have their own requirements and their own vetting process. There are some things that we do not allow PER to be used for. For example, you can't use PER to manage personal health information for HIPAA-controlled projects. So the researcher receives the default allocation of storage. They can register a grant award to increase that allocation, and they can invite the collaborators to join the project. When they're inside the project space, essentially they get their own Git repository, if you're familiar with Git. This is also integrated with Google Drive, so if they're using that environment, they can synchronize their files between a folder in Google Drive and their PER project. They also get a lot of like Web 2.0 features, things like Wiki, a blog, some project management features like a to-do list and project notes, as well as a news feed, and of course the ability to stage data publications. So this is what the project space looks like. These are, you basically see the functions here on the side that I just talked about. In terms of the storage that we offer, the default allocation, again, is 10 gigabytes per project. From within that project, you can publish 1 gigabyte of data. And this is to anybody in our user group who wants to create a project. There's no limit on the number of projects that you can create. And then as an incentive for sponsored research, if you associate a grant award with your project, that goes up to 100 gigabytes. of project space and 10 gigabytes of publication space. The idea is that the projects are transient, and the published data then are persisted. Again, the default for an unsponsored project is 3 years. The default for a sponsored project is 10 years. And then all published and archived data sets will maintain for a minimum of 10 years. Additionally, we have an embargo feature. So if a researcher wants to get a DOI for a data publication but isn't ready to publicly release it, they can set that embargo date anytime within that 10-year period. And then basically to avoid getting clobbered by big data projects, if you have a project that's going to require more than 100 gigabytes or more than 10 gigabytes of published data, we have pricing available down at the bottom where we can offer that as a cost recovery. So this is what a data publication looks like. I didn't walk through the workflow because it's very similar to the repositories and the services that you probably offer. You can see the data site DOI, basic metadata about the data set. A little bit about preservation and stewardship. Like I said, we've got an initial commitment of 10 years. Then the researcher or his or her department can continue to fund the support of the data set. That's fine. Otherwise, the data set will be remanded to the libraries. We'll manage it as we manage the rest of our collections. Our design was guided by the ISO 16363 Trustworthy Digital Repository Specification, also the TRAC, the Trusted Repository Audit Checklist, and guided by the three main sections, organizational infrastructure, digital object management, and the technical infrastructure and security and risk management. And so this forced us to do things like define our designated community, to have a digital preservation policy, to have a digital preservation strategic plan, have a file format registry, to do a risk assessment of our repository and these kinds of things, which were very important. In terms of the bits and pieces of it, we're currently working with a dual backup strategy. However, this is in development now and in beta and should be rolled out within the next month or two, where we're creating true archival information packages using the Bagot specification, essentially taking the data files along with some descriptive metadata in Dublin Core and mods, wrapping it in METS, and then producing a bag which will then be replicated on the Meta Archive Cooperative Network, which is a blocks network if you're familiar with that technology. And so this is geographically dispersed and redundant with 7 copies being maintained. So I want to take a second to highlight the librarian workflow that accompanies PER. One of our objectives with PER was to give our librarians more opportunities to interact with researchers about their data. And so what you see is there are opportunities throughout this workflow. For example, our librarians consulting on data management plans. Every time a researcher creates a project in PER, the librarian will get an email notifying them about the creation of that project based on the department affiliation of the researcher. So if it was a faculty member in civil engineering, our civil engineering librarian will get an email saying, Dr. Jones just opened a new project in PER. It's just an opportunity, it's not an obligation, but then if you meet Dr. Jones in the hall, you have the opportunity to say, oh, I saw that you opened a project in PER. You know, do you need any help, you know, putting together a data management plan or organizing your information? The librarian may be invited to consult on the project. At my institution, we have librarians who are writing data management plans, reviewing data management plans. They're consulting on research projects. In some cases, they are co-PIs on projects that have a large data component and require their skills. They can be added to the projects in PER and be a part of the team. Again, it's just an opportunity. It's not an obligation. Additionally, when a grant is awarded, we also notify the librarians. And then there's a little more of a motivation. You know, in this case, someone has said, I am going to use PER as a component of my data management plan in my grant proposal that was awarded. So also, I mentioned our librarians review and post submitted data sets. And then last but not least, at the end of the 10 years, they will make a selection or deselection decision about the data. So a little bit about the software we're using. It's called HubZero. It was also developed at Purdue, originally funded by the National Science Foundation through the Network for Computational Nanotechnology. You can download the software at hubzero.org. It's maintained by the nonprofit HubZero Foundation. There are currently about 50 hubs online. Typically, they're supporting different virtual scientific communities. They have collectively over 500,000 users. Probably the best example of a hub, if you want to look at one, besides PER, would be nanohub.org. This is the kind of the original hub, and it takes advantage of the full features suite of HubZero, including simulation tools and collaborative software development, things that we haven't incorporated into PER yet. HubZero runs on a basic LAMP stack, so Debian, Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. It's implemented as a series of components and extensions to the Joomla framework, and it uses the Easy ID integration that Joan was talking about before to mint the data site DOIs. And I should mention that while HubZero is open source, there are some customizations and extensions that we've done with PER that are not part of that open source distribution. So in terms of the people who are behind PER, how we kind of govern PER, at the topmost level, we have an executive committee. This is our Dean of Libraries, our Chief Information Officer, and our Vice President for Research. These guys deal with the budget and for approving high-level policies. They meet about once a semester. Reporting to them would be the PER Steering Committee, with equal representation, two from libraries, two from IT, and two from the research office, as well as three domain faculty researchers who represent our user input. And this group meets on a monthly basis. And then we have the project team, the staff who are dedicated to PER, approximately six FTE, myself half-time as project director. We have 3.85 FTE technologists. So these are web developers, software developers, middleware engineers, security expert, etc. We've got 20% of a metadata specialist, a quarter-time digital archivist, and then a digital data repository specialist, Courtney Matthews, who serves as our primary point of contact in doing outreach and promoting use of the service. So how have we been doing? This is kind of our update slide. We looked just yesterday. To date, PER has been included in the data management plans of 784 grant proposals that came from Purdue. Of those, 68 of grants have been awarded. This last month, we just passed 1,000 registered researchers, and we have about 200 active research projects. And so these are some early indications of success, but we still have a ways to go. We wanted to take a look at our data management plans that were going out of Purdue to see what solutions people were using. You know, who's using PER, who's using disciplinary repositories, how many people are using their own home-baked solutions. And so between January and June of this year, we looked at all of the NSF proposals that went out from Purdue. And saw that about half of them were using PER. Another third were using local resources that were supplied by their lab, their center, or their department. 14% were using disciplinary repositories, so things like ICPSR, the Protein Data Bank, or one of the other hubs. And then 8% were projects that were not producing data, or the researchers clearly didn't understand the DMP requirement, or you know, that kind of thing, kind of other category. Just to make the point, we don't require that our researchers use PER. It's offered to them as a service. If there is a disciplinary repository that makes more sense for them to use, that's fine. Our subject specialists are aware of these and encourage and promote their use. And so, having talked about PER, I've got a little bit of time. I wanted to offer some suggestions for people who manage repositories to help promote and facilitate the practice of data citation with six examples. So the first one is a no-brainer, but you'd be surprised how many repositories don't actually tell their users to cite data, give them instructions. So an FAQ, a help document, actually putting the words, you should cite this data set in your repository. So this example from the ICPSR, they offer excellent user instructions on encouraging users to cite data and telling them how they can do that and why they should do it. Of course, this is preaching to the choir using persistent identifiers. Things like data site DOIs Also using ORCID author identifiers that we heard about this morning are things to be encouraged as best practices, and to actually show those to the users. Don't obscure them. Show them this object has an identifier that's meaningful. It means cite me. Display the license. This is another one of those things where it's just a matter of prompting the user to say, you can reuse this data, but you should also attribute credit. Giving users examples of citations. So making it as easy as showing them a formatted citation that they can copy and paste. It basically just prompts them to say, I should be citing this data set that I'm using. And the TU Delft guys at Data Centrum do a great job of this. Number five, exposing structured citations. So machine-readable citations. So in this example, Dryad is exposing a coin. There are lots of other approaches for doing this. It could be embedded RDF. It could be just simply offering a BibTeX file or an RAS file. But researchers are using citation management software to download and cite their documents. As repository managers, we could be doing the same thing to help them cite data sets. And in most cases, it's just a couple of lines of code to make this possible. And last but not least, presenting existing citations. So this falls under the category of monkey see, monkey do. So if you offer, you show the other things that cite this data set, it would encourage the practice of data citation. So in this example from the NanoHub, these are the papers that have cited their use of this software tool in this case. And they even go so far as to break it down between affiliated users and non-affiliated users. So this would be when the author cites her own data set, that would be affiliated, or other users cite their data sets. And this is simple, but not easy. It's a lot of work to collect these citations, but I believe this is one of the most powerful things you can do to promote the practice of citing data. And so I'm out of time, but thank you for the opportunity to talk about PER today, and I guess we'll go to questions. Thanks.